So it all started with one single conversation where Zuzana was telling me about how we could make a material from coconut water. And it's just fascinating, like how you could turn coconut water into a material, like something which is solid.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands which are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. We record this episode in one of the most cosmopolitan and diverse cities in India, Mumbai. Today, we have with us Susmit Sushil and Susanna Gomboshova, co-founders of Malai. There's more to coconut than you thought. They join us from Cochin, Kerala, a lovely coastal southern city in India. Welcome, Susanna and Susmit.
Hello, Vidya.
Hello, Vidya. Thank you so much for inviting us to your podcast. It's great.
I was absolutely fascinated when I came across your brand. My brain went like, wait, how and what? But before we get into that, my roots are from Kerala, and coconuts are very important in every aspect of my life, in terms of food, in terms of medicine, in terms of beauty care, in terms of religion.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Kerala and its relationship with coconut, how passionate a Keralite is about coconut.
Kerala, from the very name of it, it's land of coconuts. It's a state or a country named after coconut tree. So I don't know if there is any other country or a state which is named after a tree. So it's literally land of coconuts. You take an aerial view of Kerala and you see like dots, green dots, and they are all coconuts. And as you rightly said, it can be used for anything and everything. Food, it's like a tree of life. It's also called a tree of life. And this is one single reason I jumped on this journey, this journey of Malai. So it all started with one single conversation where Zuzana was telling me about how we could make a material from coconut water. And it's just fascinating, like how you could turn coconut water into a material, like something which is solid. So that was the start of the story.
So who thought about the company and how did you guys go about it?
It started with Zuzana. So I would ask her to tell the story how it started.
Yeah, actually, my journey didn't start with coconuts at all initially. During my studies in London, I was researching a material called bacterial cellulose. It's a type of material that grows, that is fermented on different types of media. You know, you might be familiar with it from the world of beverages, where kombucha is very popular nowadays. You might be familiar with it from food industry, if you like the nata de coco. You might be familiar with it from cosmetic industry. Maybe in some cases it's used in as a face mask. Media. And well, during that time, during the research stage, I came across an industry developed in the Philippines, which uses precisely coconut water for fermentation process of bacterial cellulose. So when I came to India, I came for a different reason. I came for a job offer, but I had an idea back in my mind, you know, after I saw India, okay, you guys have a lot of coconuts. I'm sure somebody must be growing bacterial cellulose here with all that stuff, but nobody was. I met Susmit at the time, and he was from Kerala. I had no idea what Kerala was and that it meant so much in terms of coconuts. But I guess he found the idea intriguing as well, precisely because he was from a part of, country, a place where coconuts have so much significance for daily life.
So how did you two meet and how did you become co-founders? Susanna, you're from Slovakia?
Yeah.
Yep.
So we met
in Mumbai.
In Mumbai, actually. I came there to work on a project for one big Indian company. So we were both working at the innovation center of the company. So we met basically as colleagues, but we shared a lot of, values. We shared similar views on sustainability, ecology. We're both quite passionate makers. So we spend a lot of time in the workshops discussing, how exciting this whole coconut growing thing is. So I think work brought us together initially, and we didn't decide to co-found the company all out of a sudden. We started experimenting. Uh, we we moved to a different district of India, in South India, where, you know, we decided to start experimenting with the growth of the material more intensively, and also to push the material further so that it can be used for all sorts of different applications.
So this first 1 year after we left our jobs, and we were not like very sure whether we will start a company, what application will this material go into. But we both were like very much intrigued by the fact that, okay, this is a very sustainable, very much a sustainable material. And let's see what this material can offer. So we thought it was like a pure research and like an open-ended research. So we slowly had to like narrow it down to one application that we would want to take it forward. Months passed.
That's a really big step to quit your jobs. You know, you probably had well-paying, interesting jobs where you're innovating and in this maker space. And you're like, okay, no, we want to try to make fiber out of water.
One thing that we undermine a lot is lot of materials. Like, materials are everywhere. Like, everything we do is materials. Like, everything around you is material, and it is one of the most undervalued substance, or like.
I mean, maybe we can, yeah, give you a little more of background.
Sure.
To what prompted us?
Yes, please.
So, from the work perspective, you know, as you said, we had jobs, you know, we were on the path of becoming members of this big company. And, you know, Susmit used to work on water filtration.
Yeah, so I used to work on a water purifier. So I worked almost all my years on water purification.
Yeah.
So... but in this company, like the one I was working for, and the one we were working for, like, we are making something very futuristic. Like, maybe 30, 40 years from now, we will have a water purifier like that. But whereas in the same state of Maharashtra, where Bombay is, people were dying because of water scarcity that year. So, like, what's the point of you making something for 30, 40 years down the line and you are not solving the problems that your society is facing right now, a few kilometers away from the place you're working? So it was in a way pointless. Susana's project was like much more interesting. Like,
yes, it was.
I'll ask you. Tell her.
I'll go ahead. So I got invited to work on a project that was initiated there, that was looking at the industrial waste that the company generated from all different businesses, factories, you know. We looked at the scale of generation of waste, so quantities, what it is. I think we... more than 800 materials, kinds of materials were identified. And from those, you know, there are materials that you can recycle, there are materials that you cannot recycle, there are materials that you simply have to incinerate. But it kind of made me understand very thoroughly the whole material cycle that is ingrained in you know, our industries. And it made me understand that recycling ultimately is great, but it's not solving our problems, you know. It's just like kind of stretching the timeline. Besides, you know, especially I think in economies and in countries like India, it's so complicated to take control over how things are done, you know, and whether processes are really done in a way that they should. So it kind of made me think about the whole material culture that we live in, and I couldn't see many materials that would be good for the environment, that would be not exploiting somebody at some point of their manufacturing. So I started simply thinking about the materials in a different way, and I didn't want to create materials or contribute to industries that would further hinder the faith of our world, let's say.
Right. So what you're trying to say is that a lot of the recycling that you saw was just kicking the can to the next stage. You know, it was just kicking the can around.
Recycling is kicking the can around.
I mean, it's a good practice. It's definitely a good practice. But, you know, it became such a huge, you know, marketing term to use as well. Every big company says, you know, we are recycling, therefore we are good.
Right.
And they even go to the measure when they say, you know, no water was used in the recycling of this, in the process of manufacturing this material. Or, you know, there are like many environmental claims which are pulled out completely from the context, because if you are recycling a material, that means that certain, you know, amount of energy, resources, water, whatever, was already used for making that material in the first place. So you're just, you know, adding to all that. So recycling, of course, is a good practice, but ultimately it's not solving the problems that we are facing.
Right. And even as human beings, you know, if personally for me, if I think I'm recycling, I feel it's okay to consume this water bottle, to use this water bottle, because I'm recycling it. But no, I should not even start at that point, right? I should have a reusable water bottle to begin with, not a plastic one. But the fact that I can recycle it gives me sort of the license to, it psychologically gives me the license to say, okay, I'm recycling it anyway. It's okay to use it. What is the meaning of the name Malai?
We have adopted the name from Natadi Coco, which means cream of coconut. And Natadi Coco is the name bacterial cellulose is known in Southeast Asian country.
Yeah, countries like Philippines, you know, Indonesia, where this bacterial cellulose with this material that we work with originated from. Malai is also how many people in the world, especially in India, would call the white flesh of tender coconut. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Yeah, so that's malai as well. And if you look at the color, the texture, yes, the appearance of the malai from coconut, it actually looks very, very similar to nata de coco or to bacterial cellulose when we ferment it on coconut water. So we saw association in that, but also malai or cream has an association of something very good quality, you know, top-notch. So it's like the best we take from nature, in a way.
From where do you get the discarded coconut water? Where do you procure your raw materials from?
So in South India, we consume a lot of coconuts. And when we say coconuts, so all the cooking oil that we use, coconut oil. We use it as hair oil, and we use it in our daily dishes. And when it comes to bakery and confectionery, we use dry coconut. We use coconut milk. So all these coconuts products, which are commercially available, are made in some sort of factories.
And when you say coconut, they use only the kernel part. They don't use the water part, to be specific.
Exactly. So all the products that are available commercially, they use the white flesh of the coconut. And the matured coconut are used for this. And we use the water that is generally thrown out or discarded. So in a way, like, we are finding an application, like a better application for an industrial
industrial waste. We are just collecting the water that's not being used, otherwise it would be thrown away. And a small coconut processing unit, according to what we found, can dispose of, 4,000 liters per day easily. It can be more. It can go up to 12,000 with a maybe medium scale, was it, or large scale?
Medium scale, yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually, we are talking about, large quantities of this water. It's not like, few hundred milliliters that are thrown away every day. So that's our primary resource.
So what is the science behind the bacterial cellulosis? What is the science? What exactly happens? Is it like making yogurt and kombucha, or how does it work?
In coconut water, there is glucose, right? So it's sweet, so it has sugar content. Primarily, we can use any stream, any liquid that has sugar content in it. We call it carbon. So if there is a carbon source, what this bacteria does is it takes the glucose from it and it links together and makes cellulose. Cellulose is a polymer of glucose. So why this bacteria is doing this is once it makes cellulose, this cellulose starts floating on the top. And this particular bacteria needs both nutrients as well as oxygen. So this flotation setup kind of facilitates that. It makes bacterial cellulose, which is also called the mother.
Mother culture, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and the whole process takes 12 to 14 days. And it really is kind of magical, because you start with, let's say, a tray with your coconut water media, which is liquid. And over first 5 days, you can see a little kind of film on the top of the water. And gradually over the days, the bacteria kind of consumes the water and converts it into this jelly. I mean, if I told you, I mean, if I didn't tell you it's cellulose, you probably wouldn't know. I mean, it's difficult to identify. It looks like it's strong jelly. And after, you know, 12, 14 days, you can see just the jelly and you can harvest it.
So how much coconut water would you need to make like a square foot of your material?
Square feet, we don't generally.
It's like, what, 30 by 30 centimeters?
Yeah, 30 by 30 centimeters.
Or you can, whatever is your standard size.
So we need around 15 liters of coconuts to make one square meter.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Square meter.
Square meter, yeah.
So 15 liters of coconut water, we'll have to break like 150 coconuts.
Mm.
Around roughly 150 to 200 coconuts for that.
And how durable is this material? If you compare it, what would you compare it to? Leather, fabric, or felt?
Not felt. So there is a distinction between, you know, bacterial cellulose in its pure form and then the malai, which is a biocomposite material that we make, that we kind of formulated here.
Mm-hmm.
Bacterial cellulose itself in the wet state looks like, yeah, kind of like malai from coconuts, let's say, kind of jelly, but it's difficult to tear it, you know, it would be quite strong.
Oh, so you have one more step after that.
Yeah,
do you want
yeah,
to
yeah.
talk about that step? Yeah. Okay. What do you do with this jelly now?
So we harvest the jelly.
Mm-hmm.
We basically have prepared invented the formulation of blending this sheet of material with natural fibers.
Mm-hmm.
We use natural fibers from banana stem, from hemp, and from sisal plants. We form it into a sheet of material. The natural fibers there serve as strengthening agent, as an agent that adds body to the material, which makes it a little more durable as well. And we have a process of dyeing as well. We only use natural dyes. So there are basically several steps into making bacterial cellulose into a sheet of malai. But they are all quite simple processes. They are all using natural compounds that are all biodegradable, which is kind of a USP, I guess, that we have. And in the end, you know, we would have what we call malai.
What are the unique properties of malai? Besides being biodegradable and using waste to create the material.
Malai, so primarily one thing that I want to make clear is that we are a materials research and development company. We research new materials, and malai is the first material that we have come up with. As designers, when we work with some materials, like we tend to take the material and use it as it is. Like we don't go back and forth. So when I say back and forth, imagine paper. Paper as a material. So if you are a designer, you can make boxes with it, you can make packaging with it. So that is using the material as it is. So when we want to do materials design, like designing with the material, we go back, like we take the paper and we say that, okay, this was pulp before. So if we look at the pulp, or if we start from the pulp before actually converting it into paper, if we start from the pulp, the possibilities kind of broaden here. So if you can do something like paper mache, you can do something like the pulp forming. The possibilities are more, not just become making it into a flat sheet, you can make three-dimensional objects with it. And if you go one step back again, so it was fiber before, like it was wood, or it was wood chips, or it was some sort of a natural fiber before making it into pulp. You could think of maybe weaving it first and then putting the pulp over it. So, you know, when you start working with the material, like the horizon kind of broadens. So coming back to the question, what are the unique properties of malai? So there are certain things that we can do with malai that cannot be done with leather. Per se, because we have all these stages of at a stage where we have a stage where there are fibers
mm-hmm.
in the manufacturing process. We have a stage where there's pulp in the manufacturing process, and we have a stage where there is a wet sheet in the manufacturing process. So what it gives to the producer or the maker who is using malai is that you can modify it at each stage, which is not like possible with when you're using PU-based or PVC-based material, or you get the material as it is, and then you don't have much options. Like you have to kind of work with what is available.
What material do you see malai substituting?
The most important thing for us is designing the right process of manufacturing of the material. And that is a priority because we want to keep it as, you know, environmentally friendly and integral in the nature as possible.